Hey, you guys. Sergeant B. Safe here.
Let's take a quick trip down memory lane. You remember that one time Captain Chaos and I met Super Crime Buster? That was a fun day. Or the time we helped the Johnson family against that computer hacker. Yoga? Nah, not for me. Next. Or that time in court with Judge Mint. ADA Justin Case went up against Scott Free, Robbie Blind, Treacherous Tony, and of course Chance Wilder. Treacherous Tony conducting illegal activity at a basketball court. The summer months when we have to educate kids about dirt bikes and four-wheelers on the roadway. Robbie Blind attempting a burglary. Yep, he got caught. Frequent flyers Robbie Blind and Chance Wilder. They get caught often. Remember the time Captain Chaos and I visited Miss Gaynor's classroom? Yeah. I think he's got a crush on her. Then there was cuffing season with the smoke detector, no gas, and the free coffee. Or this poor guy who had to go up against Nasty Nina and her attorney, Wacky Tacky. Or how about the time Robbie Blind and Treacherous Tony got into that traffic accident while drinking and driving? They really thought they were going to run away. These and many more adventures can be seen on our YouTube page and also during the podcast Black and Blue. Don't forget to watch us and subscribe, and that's your tip of the day to get you on your way.
Awfully quiet tonight.
No, you didn't.
Fuck?
You just did not do that.
Welcome to Black and Blue, the podcast that brings you the untold stories behind the badge. Every week at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we dive deep into the lives of our unsung heroes, the first responders and law enforcement officers who put their lives on the line to protect us all. So join us as we humanize the badge. We shed light on the incredible individuals who wear it proudly. From rookies just starting out on their journey to seasoned vets with years of experience, even retirees who continue to make a difference in their communities. Come with us and discover the trainings that mold us. The unforgettable experiences that make us. Publications that inspire us to push forward. So buckle up and get ready to embark on a thrilling journey through the lives of those who protect and serve. This is the Heartbeat, Black and Blue. Black and Blue, where the stories behind the badge are true.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to another weekly episode of Black and Blue. I am your host. I'm your motivational speaker, your empowerment coach, your author, and your favorite baker, Coach Klee, coming at you. And we've got another wonderful guest backstage. I'm going to give you a little preview of what we got going on right here. All right. And I'll introduce him in a minute. So make sure you guys get your questions ready, because we're got a tremendous show ahead of us and we're going to have a lot of fun. Black and Blue is the podcast that goes live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time weekly. And when we go live with the first responder or law enforcement officer, whether they're rookie, seasoned, or retiree. And when we interview them, we talk about their trainings, their experiences, and their publications. And we're not going to fall short today. We got an exciting guest. Some of you may know him, others of you may not. But by the end of this live, you will know him indefinitely. And make sure you get your questions ready, because this is a live and interactive podcast. We're streaming on 5 different platforms. That's right, 5 different platforms. We're on 2 on YouTube, we're on 1 on LinkedIn, and we're on 2 on Facebook. So therefore, like I said, we're streaming on those 5. I can't see who's in here. I want to know who's in here, and I'm pretty sure you want me to know who's in here. So if you're looking for that shout out, make sure you put your name and where you're from in the comment section, and I'll give you that shout out that you're looking for. We already got Steady P's on here talking about nice jacket. Got Jamon on here talking about good evening. Thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure you guys tag, like, and share. Those of you who have your questions, looking for those shout outs, that's how you do that. If you have a question, you have to put the question in the comment section as well, and we'll answer your question as best of our ability. Understand that there's about a 5 to 10 second delay from the time that you post it to the time that we see it, but we'll definitely address that question. All right. Again, talked about the 5 different platforms, getting caught up. You see the websites on there. Make sure you guys check those out. Don't do it right now. Do it afterwards. We got Ernie Stevens, former guest on the show. He's talking about good evening, Coach. Good evening, Ernie. Thank you guys for tuning in. All right. This podcast is sponsored by One Way Publishing. One Way Publishing is the sponsorship. When you saw the commercial at the beginning with Certain Be Safe. The books, I got 5 books that I published myself. There's a couple books behind me of clients of theirs that have published books through One Way Publishing. Their motto is they can turn a mere thought into a book that's bought, and they can make that thing happen for you. Let me get one of these banners up here. We got Kay Childs, her book right there, her poetry book. She started writing that back in the early 2000s or maybe before. She never thought she was going to be a published author. Then she reached out to One Way Publishing and made that thing happen. And her book, it came out right before Christmas. It was the perfect time. It made her dreams come true. She became a published author on her literary work. And make sure you guys check that out, because that's on Amazon. And also before Christmas, To Be So Tall, the dynamic duo, mother and daughter, Shayla and Sophia Thompson, came out with their first children's book. The children's book, To Be So Tall, and they've been hitting up churches, they've been hitting up assemblies, they've been having book signings. They're all over Facebook and Instagram and so many different things. Make sure you guys check them out. Their book is on Amazon as well, all right? And of course, all the 5 books are on Amazon that are written by yours truly. If you're looking to be a voiceover for a Sergeant B Safe commercial, reach out to workwithklee.com. You can get on there. If you're looking to be on the platform itself so you can be highlighted, workwithklee.com is that platform. And speaking of books and speaking of One Way Publishing, yesterday we had the 6-year anniversary of my first book that came out March 4th. And it came out on March 4th because it's the only day of the year that has marching orders. And I'm going to give a quick snippet on a celebration of that. Make sure, look at that thumbs up right there. Absolutely. If you see yourself in the picture, make sure you give it a like. Make sure you tag, like, and share. And stand by. We're going to go ahead and have a March 4th tribute.
Thank you for coming on the show.
6 years ago, I never imagined that my wildest dreams would actually become a reality. It's hard to believe that it's been 6 years since I became a published author with my own publishing company, One Way Publishing. It's been an incredible journey and a truly amazing experience. Let's celebrate the start of this new era with the anniversary of this book that was published on this very day. When it was published, I was so excited. It was so amazing. I couldn't keep up with all the orders. I couldn't keep up with all the excitement that was going around. Look at all the pictures that I took. Today is the only day of the year that gives us a clear directive and instructions. My favorite, March 4th.
And there you have it, the March 4th tribute, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Like I said, I'm your host. Darren's on here. Good evening to you too. I don't know if I introduce myself on different platforms. I'm Cleet Tillman. Sometimes I'm Coach Cleet. Sometimes I'm Clark Tent. Make sure you guys look that up and make sure you tag, like, and share on those different platforms. Some people even say Cleet, C-L-E-E, stands for Continuing Law Enforcement Edutainment, because we educate and we entertain while we do the same thing. I got a congratulations from Shayla, one of the dynamic mother of the children's book, talking about March 4th. Absolutely. Congratulations, bro, from YouTube, Jamon. I appreciate you guys. You guys know that I'm currently still a full-time active member, law enforcement with a certain department. So with that and coming on here is a lot of fun and a lot of good information. But enough about me. We're going to jump right into it, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, because I'm excited to jump into this interview, and I hope you guys are too. I read the book. It's available on Amazon unsealed. Yes, and it's written by Mark Green. And I got to go ahead and I wrote it down so I wouldn't miss anything. I'm going to introduce him. He's a retired Navy SEAL for over 20 years in the U.S. Navy. He's been the assistant of the officer in charge SEAL Team 8 in Iraqi Freedom, officer in charge Special Boat Team 20. He's been the officer in charge of SEAL Team 8 of Afghani Operation Endure Freedom, Special Boat Team 20, Operations Officer, Special Ops Command in Europe, the Afghan Operation Endure Freedom, and Naval Special Warfare Group 4. He's also the author of the book that I just showed, Unsealed, and he bears his soul and puts his... It's not easy to be an individual who puts himself out there and goes back from his childhood all the way up to current and talks about that. It's a great book. It's good information on there. He talks about his transition out of the Navy and working for USC as well. So make sure you guys get your questions ready. Without further ado, I see Alan. Yep, loved his book, loved yours too as well. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm going to bring Mark Green to the stage. Mark, are you there?
I am here, Cleet. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
It's good. I'm happy to be here. It's a Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. Nothing else to do, nothing better to do. So join you on the show. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for making yourself available and blessing your this show. I appreciate having you on here. Like I told you, I sent you a message before that I finished up your book a couple days ago. And I mean, wow. Is all I can really say. But I know there may be people on here that may not know who you are or have not read your book. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
So I, like you said, I was a Navy SEAL for 20 years, started off enlisted, became an officer and did my 20-year career. But my beginnings were, I was an Air Force brat. Okay. My father's in the Air Force. My grandfather was in the Army. So having a military career was, seemed like a natural progression. Uh-huh. A big kid when I was young, my dad's like, hey, guess what you're doing? You're playing football. So I played football throughout high school, played at Miami of Ohio, and then at Kent State. And Kent State's where I got injured, football career ended, and my slow journey towards the U.S. Navy SEAL team started back in 1991. 1991-92.
Gotcha. Jamon's on here saying, go Army. Got to give him that shout out. Whole Army leads the way. I understand. But still, got to get that out there. Just having a little fun. But before you enlisted in the Army, I remember in the book, and your grandfather sat you down. Yeah. And I remember a similar story, not the exact same, of a grandfather, elderly person in my family, sitting down and wanting to share information, share a lifestyle. And I, being like, let's say five or below, I'm like, oh, this is so boring. I can only imagine you're sitting there watching baseball with your grandfather and he's trying to get you to spark your interest. And you're sitting there like, this is the most boring game ever, not knowing the heights that your grandfather achieved until later in life. Can you tell us a little bit about the background on that one?
So my grandfather, I think to this day, he might have been the biggest man I'd ever seen. And I don't know if it's because I was a kid, but he was just an enormous man, right? Mm-hmm. But he was quiet, stoic, but he was always watchful. Mm-hmm. But you usually tried to avoid grandpa if you could. So we'd walk into the house and you'd look right through the front door, mm-hmm. and grandma's always cooking something, and my cousins are out causing mayhem, and it was just my typical day. So I get ready to go in to eat some of my grandma's yellow cake, and all of a sudden I hear from the side, from his throne, his baby wife, get over here. And I look over, and it's my grandfather, mm-hmm. and I'm, you know, taken aback a little bit. So I say, yes, sir. And he's like, come on over here. I'm going to teach you. We're going to go out and throw some baseball. Mm-hmm. But he had his throne room, so it was his chair, but he had a small chair for me. So I walk up to the chair, and I just stood there because he didn't tell me I could sit. Uh-huh. So I just looked there. He's like, hey, boy, have a seat. And he's like, we're going to go out and play baseball, but first we're going to learn about baseball. We're going to watch this game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, sir. So I hopped up in my chair, and he's trying to explain the game to me, but the game had started. And I hadn't seen him so excited before. He had this old baseball mitt. Uh-huh. He had a baseball with it, and he's like, all right, here we go. So I sat through, I think, the most boring of my life. Uh-huh. Food's cooking, cousins are outside playing, and I think it was either a one-hitter and a no-hitter. And so my seven or eight-year-old self was like, nobody gets a base. Somebody's throwing this stupid little white thing, and I've never been so bored in my life. So game's over. Uh-huh. He said, hey, son, you ready to go out and play? I was like, no, sir, I'm not playing baseball ever again. He's like, oh. I said, no, sir, I'm never playing baseball. Hopped up and got some food from grandma and never looked back at baseball until much, much later in life when I actually appreciated the moment that he was trying to share with me. And actually, I didn't really think about it until I started writing the book what that moment was.
Yeah. And so at that time, you weren't understanding of how important baseball was to your grandfather, correct? That he was in the Negro baseball leagues himself?
Yeah. So I guess he was a prolific pitcher. Mm. At 6'5", you know, I guess he could just bring it. And he had four pitches. He had a slider. He had a knuckleball. He had a fastball and then a curveball.
Okay.
And I didn't find that out until his funeral. And then I found out my grandpa was in a band and stuff. So, I mean, so looking back, I wish I would have taken him up on learning how to play baseball. Mm-hmm. But that just wasn't my path. You know, it was something that I still enjoyed throwing baseball with my dad out in the field. But playing baseball, it completely turned me off.
I understand. I understand. I stopped playing baseball fifth grade myself, so I get it. And one thing, and I say that to say because football was my passion as well. Mm-hmm. And I played all the way through high school. I didn't go to college. I joined the military instead. But after I got out the military, I played semi-pro. And I say that and said, yes, your question, and I'll get to it here in a minute. But Mark, I understand you played football at a higher level beyond high school while in college. What was that like?
So it was a really great experience because in high school, it's raw talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the coaches they're as good as they can be. Right. Mm-hmm. But when I got to Miami of Ohio, the coaching staff under Randy Walker, mm-hmm. and which was called the Cradle of Coaches at Miami of Ohio, really had great coaches, and I actually learned the game of football. It was like a light bulb came on because I had all the raw talent, and then as the season was progressing, I was on the scout team, and I was picking up the playbook and figuring out the game. And then one day, Coach Sean Watson got the scout team together, and he said, okay, we're going to run a football play. And he said, okay, you're going to put the wide receiver in motion. It's going to take the DB from a cover one to a cover two zone. Mm-hmm. That's also going to set back the linebacker, freeze him. Then you can do play action, freeze the mm-hmm. other linebacker. And in the middle of the field, off to the left of the field, there's going to be this big opening.
Mm-hmm.
The receiver is going to sit right in that opening. And I drop back, you know, I do put him in motion. And all of a sudden, I saw the play just start to coalesce. And right where that receiver was supposed to be, he sat right there. I was so shocked, Klee, that I took a sack because I just stopped. But then I was like, holy crap, I just learned football.
The stars just aligned for you,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, and it all made sense. And once I figured it out in a way that I learned, I was like, okay, I get it now. Mm-hmm. And then the growth was just really exponential. So that strong arm that my grandfather saw as a kid, you know, I like to think I had an NFL level arm. I just didn't know football quite yet. And I was a freshman, 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And then I transferred up to Kent State.
Mm-hmm.
And was progressing. It wasn't the same coaching environment. It wasn't the same athletic environment. So I wasn't on track as much as I was at Miami, but I was still progressing. And then in spring ball, moved up the depth chart and took a catastrophic hit on my shoulder.
Yeah.
And in my career right there.
Yeah, yeah. I remember reading about it. So that was a game changer in itself. And then that kind of brought you back to working mediocrity and a dinosaur of a establishment that we all once knew as Blockbuster. And trust, I'm not making fun when I say that. I used to be a frequent flyer at Blockbuster, and it's no longer in existence. But working there, you talked about how you had the revelation. A customer came up to you, and it changed the course of your that interaction. Changed, you know, the light bulb went off. Like this, I'm not going to be doing this much longer.
Yeah, I could do it, but a friend of mine named Jason,
mm-hmm.
that same night came into the Blockbuster, and he looked at me, and he's like, you know, what are you doing in Blockbuster? You're going to be this great quarterback. You're going to do all kinds of stuff, and now you're Be Kind, Please Rewind. And he's like, what are you doing here? And I didn't have an answer for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jason walks out, and this gentleman walks up, and picture Morris Day in Blockbuster. All right. So, yeah. So Morris walks up and says, hey, man, what's that movie about that? The girl, she turns into an alien, just starts eating people and stuff, and with utmost confidence, you know, did the double nose, right? And then he said, yeah, man, Speckies. And I was like, sir, do you mean species? He's like, yeah. So at that point, I had had enough, and I was like, you know what? If I don't do this, I was 24. And I looked at it, and I was like, you know what? If I don't go join the Navy and be a SEAL right now, then I'm never going to do it. You know, I'm going to put it off. I'm going to kind of languish in mediocrity. And my mom's voice kept saying, when I was young, she said, son, you're going to be something special. You're going to do great things one day. And I just looked around and I was like, I'm not doing anything great. I'm as mediocre as I could be. And I'm wasting my talents and wasting the gifts that God gave me. So I went and joined the Navy the next day.
Gotcha. And I know that was an elaborate ordeal with the pull-ups and actually going through buds with being the first team. I was reading the story on you guys. If you get finished with this drill early, you would get to go get some sleep until the other boats came in.
Yeah.
Your sleep was interrupted and you got into an argument and it all worked out. Like, you know, we stand on our word, which I actually thought was very honorable, you know, coming from an instructor to actually go up the chain and to come back down and to work out in your favor because, you know, you got to stand, as everyone says, you stand on business. If you put your word out there, then obviously then, you know, you have to honor that word.
Yeah. That surprised me too, because, you know, it's a really harsh environment and it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's arduous and it's designed for you to go away. But one of the last things you think about is, hey, in the midst of all this chaos, once you give your word to somebody, that is, mm-hmm. you stand on that. And that, yeah. And very old school. So when the instructor said, hey, you guys finish first, you get to go to bed. And I was all tucked in and we were all, oh, man, I was clear. I was so warm. The instructor yells out green. And to go back, I had a heat injury. Mm-hmm. So I was put in the infirmary for a day and he got in trouble. The instructor staff got in trouble. So every time he saw me, he's like, every time you see me, you're going to be wet inside and out, which means I empty my canteen and then I hop in the Pacific Ocean, make myself a sugar cookie and report back to him, you know, and keep it moving. Uh-huh. So when I was sleeping, Instructor Gekka did the same thing. He's like, green, get over here. Cussing, I get up, you know, and he says, hey, you know what you got to do? And it was that Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, Return of the Jedi moment. Right? I look over at the water. I look at the instructor, look back at the water. I'm like, that's absolutely not. I was like, you told me I get to go to sleep. But I, as a 25-year-old man, I'm throwing a absolute temper tantrum, you know, stomping my feet. And I was like, we win. We get to go to sleep. So he... The mayhem's going on. The instructor's like, what in the world's going on over here? And Chief came over and was like, green, what's going on? I was like, well, and then I had the same fit all over again. I was like, he told me we could get to go to sleep. And Chief looks over at the instructor's like, hey, did you tell him he gets to go to sleep? He's like, yeah, Chief, that's what I told him. He's like, green, go back to sleep. He's like, we keep our word around here. Mm-hmm. And that was such a profound moment and hadn't slept in days, right? But that memory was so burned into my psyche that I was like, okay, this is how we do business. No matter what, we keep our word. And it was a throwback to what my parents taught me.
Yeah. And it goes, Alan Goodrich is in here. Shout out to you, Alan. Thank you for tuning in. He's got a question. One of my favorite parts in the book as well. Question from Mark. I died laughing with the Naval Academy swimming story. Did you ever run into those instructors later and have a good laugh at that situation? That situation where, you know, you were the only black guy or one of the few black guys in a training situation and they zoned in and kept an eye on you to make sure that you could swim. So you were faking it for a while and then you were having fun until another instructor came in and told the instructors, you idiots, he's a SEAL.
Yeah, so the drill instructor, he's still a dear friend of mine. He and I talk regularly. And we bring that story up all the time. And, you know, it was just, you can take it a couple different ways. You can say, okay, I'm going to take this personally and prove this guy wrong.
Yeah.
Or I can mess with them a little bit and say, hey, you know, why don't I not look at this judge's book by its cover? Mm-hmm. So, you know, got the class involved and I would just watch him. And every time he was my shadow. Right. He was on the pool deck, I was in the water, and the guy was just
he was on
it. Knew what was going on. So so then I kind of look around, and I go to the bottom of the pool and just look up at him, and he's just jumping up and down. So I come up, I was like, instructor, what's wrong? Like, you can't jump, you can't go underwater like that. And I look around my class, I was like, everybody else is going underwater. And the gear started churning, and he's like, okay, so we're doing it again, and two instructors show up. So I'm like, okay. So I go to the bottom of the pool, and I start, like, walking on the bottom of the pool. And two of them are up there jumping. And then I go back up to the pool, and, you know, they're both saying, sir, you can't. It's like, you can't do that. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw my drill instructor come in. And he's twitchy, you know, he's ready to get the class started. He sees what's going on, and he just yells out in his drill instructor voice. He's like, he's Navy SEAL, you idiot. And then the light turns on, and he's just like, and you can see it. And he's like, okay, not only can this guy swim, but he's one of the best swimmers in the Navy. And then we had a relay race, and I beat the entire class by myself. So, and then I get out of the water, like, did you learn something? And he's like, yes, sir, I got it. I was like,
That's got to be a fun moment to look at. Yeah, little do you know.
Dang, man, come on. I did 2 mile swims for a living for 6 months, so I'm good.
Yeah, I read that too, Alan. I was like, oh, yeah, that was a funny moment. That's got to. That's one of those fun moments in life you have to savor, so I can understand why you put that in the book.
Yeah, you know, the book is, you know, it's the life journey, but I didn't want it to be so serious that you didn't see the funny parts of life that that are that the good that comes with the bad sometimes,
right?
The challenging.
Seti P has been waiting patiently for his question. He's got a question on here. What's the difference between SEAL Team 6 and SEAL Team 8 or any other SEAL team?
Okay, so we are. So the SEAL teams are, they support conventional forces. So the Army goes in, the Rangers go in, and they need the Green Berets or the Rangers or the SEAL teams. They go in and do special operations supporting conventional operations. SEAL team or Naval Special Warfare Development Group, and then the Army equivalent as Delta. They're what's called a Tier 1 unit. Okay. So their mission's completely different. Their permissions are completely different. So they don't interact with us and the regular SEAL teams at all. They're a national mission force, and they get their marching orders from the Secretary of Defense and the President. So,
gotcha.
So that's the main difference. We're all SEALs, but then they go to another selection course and get selected for that, and then they have a completely different mission, and they're some of the best in the world at it. So I don't say the name out of respect. They're a DEV group or the Naval Special Warfare Development Group.
Gotcha. I understand what you're saying. Absolutely. But thank you for explaining and sharing to the best of your ability that you could. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going to take a quick second, 30-second break for Sergeant B Safe to come in here, a commercial interlude, and we're going to jump right back. So get your questions ready. And if you haven't already purchased the book, make sure you do so. It's available on Amazon, and we'll discuss on other platforms as well. But stand by. We'll be right back.
Captain Chaos, did you mess up another report again?
Sorry, Sergeant B-Safe. I'll try to be more, careful.
What in the world was that? Whoa, look out the window, Captain Chaos. There's a real live superhero.
We have to meet them, Sergeant B-Safe. Let's go!
There's Super Crime Buster to the rescue.
Hey, there's Super Crime Buster! Woohoo!
Hey, you're the greatest, Super Crime Buster.
Yeah, we know Super Crime Buster's out there. We're actually on the way, but we keep getting phone calls. Excuse me, Super Crime Buster. I'm Sergeant B-Safe, and this is my partner, Captain Chaos. We'd like to thank you for your incredible bravery.
Yeah, you're amazing. We're big fans.
Wait. You are the police officers, but not the superheroes?
No, we're just ordinary officers doing our duty.
But we may not have superpowers, but we're heroes in our own way.
You're right! The heroes don't always wear capes or possess superhuman abilities. It's the everyday heroes like you who make a difference.
Thank you, Super Crime Buster, for that reminder. You are absolutely 100% correct. To all the first responders and law enforcement officers, take it from me and Captain Chaos, we applaud you. We know you do a thankless job and are highly needed. You are a superhero in your own right. Keep up the good work in these perilous times because you are needed. Wouldn't you agree, Kraken? And that's your tip of the day. To get you on your way.
And are back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Thank you guys for standing by with us. We're back in here with Mark Green and his book, Unsealed, which if you haven't already got, let me get it. There we go. Good view of it right here. It's a great book, a great read. Make sure you guys go ahead and pick up a copy. And we're going to pick up right where we left off in this interview. Jumping right back into it, Mark. Listening to your stories going through making it as a SEAL. And then speaking with one of your comrades or instructors or drill instructors where you graduate and you make it to the highest of heights and you feel like you don't feel any different.
Right.
And you're thinking that you've hit this pinnacle and things would change. And I understand. And you're like, I feel the exact same. Why don't I feel any differently? And they're like, because you've always been here. Or you've always been a SEAL. You know, this is the wean out ones that aren't supposed to be there. I think. So such a powerful story right there, and such resonated so well that I understand why you placed that in the book as well. And it shows your drive. It shows who you are. It shows your resiliency. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that individual story?
Yeah, so when back when I showed up, there was not a lot of information on SEAL teams or anything. I saw that one video that my friend showed me. Which, you know, ignited the inferno that, you know, you need to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed up and I wasn't ready for what I was getting myself into, but I was slowly progressing.
Mm-hmm.
Then I, you know, started to figure out what it took to graduate. Right. So as I'm going through the class and I'm getting better, getting stronger,
mm-hmm.
up on week 5, which is the pinnacle of first phase, is Hell Week. And if you don't know what Hell Week is, it's 120 hours, starts on Sunday, ends on Friday. If I'm not mistaken, they schedule 3 hours of sleep. So you are, you know, you're at your physical and mental limits,
mm-hmm.
by design. And, you know, we get the majority of the people quit during Hell Week. It's just, you know, it's just such an incredible test of fortitude and mental toughness. And once you get secured on Friday, I was disappointed on Monday, but I was like, you know what? Maybe it's just something going on. The rest of the week comes up and we're coming up on Thursday. And I normally had a smile on my face all the time, you know, because I was happy to be, I had a good time, but I was in my element.
Mm-hmm.
And the instructor, John, looked over at me. He's like, Green, what is going on? And I was like, instructor, you got a minute? And he's like, yeah, what's up? And I was like, I don't feel any different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought I was going to finish Hell Week and I was going to open up my shirt. There's going to be an S on it. You know, a cape would emerge and I could start flying all over the place. Right? I was going to be Superman after this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, you're not going to feel any different.
Mm.
And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, whatever happened to you in life, your parents' upbringing, whatever your experience was, you've been a SEAL your whole life. Buds is not for you. Hell Week is not for you. Hell Week is for, and he looked at the row of helmets of people who quit or didn't make it. He's like, Buds is for those guys. He's like, and you know, you're not going to feel any different. And you're just meant to do this thing. And, you know, that's what this is all about. This is not for you. And then I was like, oh, so I've always been this awesome. Then, huh? And then Roland's like, yeah, Green, get out of here. You stink. Beat it. So, and, you know, Cleet, throughout life, I've hit some milestones.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I flunked out of college, and when I got my bachelor's degree, I was like, okay, I don't feel a whole lot different. Mm-hmm. Then I went and got my master's degree,
mm-hmm.
an MBA from Naval Postgraduate School. And you think and you approach problems differently, but I got my diploma. I was like, man, I don't feel any different about that either.
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward to 2020 when I graduated from USC, with the second master's, I was like, I don't feel any different. But then I just came back and those words from instructor, like, this is, you're not going to feel any different because you're already capable of doing this thing.
Right.
And school is just a mechanism to weed out people who who can't make the cut.
Right.
But at 48, I finally sunk in that, okay, you didn't feel different after Hell Week. You didn't feel different after you got your trident. You didn't feel different after all these things because this is just who you are.
Right. I like that. I like that. That resonated well. I like the explanation on that as well. And doing all the amazing things, reaching the highest of heights and pinnacle, you have a family. You're married. The birth of your oldest daughter comes in, and I know how you explain that. You're like, I'm basically useless.
Yeah.
All this stuff over here, but you know, I'm basically useless because I there's no bond. And I'm just here to pay bills and to take trash out or whatever.
Yeah.
But then that one day, what happened that one day? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so she was born and I looked at her, I was like, oh man, nothing's pretty about this kid, right? So the birthing process is atrocious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't bond with my daughter right away.
Mm-hmm.
Because she didn't need me at all. She needed her mom, and you know, mom was doing a great job of taking care of her. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was doing all the grunt work, and I would try to hold her, but I had this little scruffy beard, and she's just like, ugh. So, you know, I couldn't hold her, I couldn't comfort her, I couldn't feed her.
Mm-hmm.
I could change her, but you know, that gets old after a while. But day I would walk into the door, I'd come home, and I'd say, hey, Riley. And she'd look at me and just kind of like, you know, whatever. And, but about, I think she's about 2 months old, a month or two old.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hi, Riley. And she smiled. And I was like, huh, maybe the kid must have farted or something. So I walked back out and said, hey, Riley. And she did it again. She smiled again. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. One more time. Third time's a charm. She could fart. So I came back and then said, hey, Riley. And she looked at me and smiled again. I was like, man, she knows who I am. Yeah. And that moment, it was just like all the feels and all the bonding happened. And, you know, I was no longer just this thing that just showed up,
mm-hmm.
made her uncomfortable. She says, like, hey, whoever you are, you're back. And I'm happy to see you. You know, and from that moment, it was just completely smitten, and she could do no wrong. She's 25 years old, still almost can do no wrong, but that was the moment. And with all four of my kids, it was kind of the same thing. After this, my son was born, I was like, okay, it'll be different. Same thing, he was just as ugly as the rest of them. And it took him about a month or two. But once that connection was made, it wasn't as drastic with the other ones because I understood what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But still, that one time, the time you connect, you finally connect with your kids, it's just such an incredible experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good story in there as well. And it's good to see, you know, having still being a family man, having kids. And for those of us that are first responders, that are in law enforcement, that are in the military, are those that are aspiring to, because a lot of questions are out there. Yeah, I want to join this agency, or I want to do this. Can I still have a family? It goes to show that you can still have a family, raise kids, and do things. You may have to, from time to time, you may be deployed or are working swing shifts or things like that, so you don't get that basic Monday through Friday 9-to-5 kind of atmosphere like civilian life does. But you still can, if you want it to happen, you can make it work. Is basically, mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
But I want to jump back into your SEAL stories here. You had two near falls that you explained in the book. One with the helicopter pilot who later comes and visits you in the hospital. And you get your slick remark in with them and didn't even know it was them. And then another, when you get dumped off a boat, I'm like, I'm reading this one, and you're down under the water. You felt like, you said, there's a hand that was pushing you down as you were trying to get back up. And you said you were so pissed Like, I'm so mad. I'm calm. I'm not even, I'm angry. I'm more angry than I am fearful or panicking. If I die down here, I'm going to be so pissed.
So mad. So mad.
Like, those are great. Can you share a little bit of those? Those two
with us? Well, you want both of them?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So we are, I'm in my first platoon. It's 1999. And I'm still a new guy, still learning. And we have these full mission profiles that we have to perform. Where that means you get the communications, you get the helicopters, you get the boats, you get everything that you're going to need to conduct a mission. Mm-hmm. Do a full mission profile. So we had a ship, we had helicopters, I mean, whole nine. And so we're going on board the Strong Texan, and mm-hmm. we do what's called a crawl, walk, run. Mm-hmm. You know, basically we dirt dive it, we talk through it, and then we rehearse it walking. Mm-hmm. And then during the daytime, the helicopters come in and drop us off, and then we do our full profile. Mm-hmm. Learn, and then we make corrections, and then we do it for real at night. It was Lake Placid during the day. Gotcha. And everybody did a great job. And then at nighttime, the sea state, which means you, for safety reasons, you can only operate if the sea state is at a certain level. Mm-hmm. Let's say sea state 5, you can't operate. We were at sea state 4 and plus. But you know, everybody wanted to do it. So the first helicopter comes on and eight guys go down the rope, picture perfect. And then the second helicopter comes on, and instead of the ship being Lake Placid, the ship is doing this.
Ooh.
Right. And the helicopter is trying to hold station, but there are cranes everywhere, and it's just mayhem on top of this deck of the ship. Mm. So the pilot was really squirrely. And six people go down, Todd goes down, and then I go down. And right before I go down, the crew chief said, two more. And the pilot thought he said no more. And he just wanted off that platform. So Todd hits the deck, and then I'm going down as fast as I can. And I look down, and all of a sudden, the helicopter's just taking off. And I was like, where the hell's the helicopter going? Where's the boat going?
Right. Yeah.
So, in training, they teach you how to. You can put the brakes on and climb up the rope and stand on the rope, just long enough to, you know, not fall in the water. But mm-hmm. I had like 6 inches of rope left, and
ooh.
I look up, and something happened to the helicopter. This whip comes down in the line, and I look at it, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm going for a swim." Knocks me off the rope, and I think. Clee, I think I probably fell at least 100 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah. So I hit the water, and the first thing I think, I was like, why am I wet? And what am I doing in the water? Because you're not prepped. You're prepped to hop on the ship and take down the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So the ship's going this way, and the current's pushing me this way.
Ooh.
And the sea state is, like I said, it's almost a 5. And I go to hit my headlamp, and I hear this sickening zzz, zzz, zzz. It's shorted out.
What can go wrong will go wrong.
Yeah, so then I'm like, okay. But the waves are crashing so hard that I'm drowning on, I'm sucking down a bunch of water. So I have to turn around, and I just keep hauling it. So finally, the helicopter realizes, everybody on the ship realizes that we're missing a guy. So by the time they figure out who's missing, they immediately go out and start their search and rescue.
Mm-hmm.
So they do what's called a figure eight. And the helicopter does a figure eight trying to look for me. And I was just on the outside of that figure eight, so they couldn't see me. And the worst sound I've ever heard in my life was that helicopter being so close, not seeing me, and then flying back the other way.
Yeah.
And I checked my gear, and I had a spare headlamp. This is back in the 90s, so there's no LED. It's just a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
So I turn that thing on, and I try to face the ship, and I can't. I'm still sucking down too much water. And I pulled my life vest, which we had on us at all times. But mm-hmm. I'm 220 pounds plus 50 pounds of gear. So yeah. All the sinking and I'm treading water. And then we had this safety brief and we were between San Clemente Island and Catalina, mm-hmm. which happened to be a great white breeding ground. So here I am, you know, I'm splashing. I was like, wait a second, I'm getting ready to become food. I gotta calm down. I gotta figure this out. And we had procured a new device, a night vision scope.
Mm-hmm.
So when the helicopter got back on deck, the guy who had it said, hey, I'm not supposed to have this, but I got this night vision scope. Let's go back out and see if we can find him. And 30, 45 minutes later, you know, I'm getting ready to dump all my gear, put my fins on and just start swimming. Cause I didn't know, it was 2 a.m. I didn't know which way I was going, but I wasn't gonna die.
Yeah.
And the best sound I ever heard was that helicopter. I heard it coming and I was like, well, maybe it's doing another figure eight. And it got closer and it got closer and it got closer. And then they see me and the rescue swimmer jumps in the water and they have a script and like, all right, calm down. We're here to rescue you. And I look at the guys like, hey, man, I get it. And you just get me out of the water. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, yeah, we're good. So he puts the litter around me and hoists me up. And I was just like, I cannot believe I survived this whole thing. But wow. If you know the Navy, they shut down air operations on an aircraft carrier. You don't do that unless something bad's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So to heat me up, I was hypothermic. I was shivering, jackhammering. They had heat blankets in there. So they had to cut my clothes off and put me on a stretcher, right? I've been in the water, 52-degree water for 45 minutes. They wheeled me out in front of the – it felt like the entire aircraft carrier was sitting right there, right? And I looked down. I'm like, this is not representative.
Still had your wits, huh?
I was like, ah. So we go up to the medical and filling up, and these two gentlemen walk in. And, you know, it'd be like your captain coming in and say, hey, everybody kind of gets to attention. Somebody just walked in, and they walk in and they say, hey, son, what happened? I was like, well, that shitty pilot didn't know what the hell he was doing. Put me in the drink, almost killed me. And the entire hospital, they were just like, what just happened? And so the dentist was like, okay, son, you take care. And he walked out. I was like, well, who is that? And they're like, well, that was the CO of the pilot. You know, he's the one who dropped you in the drink. I was like, yeah, well, he earned that one. So
yeah, I wouldn't be mad about that either.
But, you know, what I learned from that is that you was prepared. Mm-hmm. You're always curious if you're prepared. If you're put in a situation, be it combat or what you do on the street,
mm-hmm.
or in the middle of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
you're trained to a point that your training's going to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I trusted my training. You know, you do what you do because you stay calm,
mm-hmm.
chaotic. And you think through the problem and you thrive through it. So my options were limited. You know, it was either swim north and south and hit Mexico or Canada, or, you know, run into California. But you know, I was gonna do something.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. But you know, it was just, I trusted my training and mm-hmm. I survived it. So when I talk to people, they're like, are you traumatized by that? I was like, no, it's a good story, but you know, I survived it. What's the traumatic part about it? I never understood that. And my training kicked in and heal, and I'm going to exhaust every opportunity that I have to survive, fight another day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So when number two happened, September 11th, we're heading down to Jakarta, Indonesia.
Uh-huh.
And, we're going to respond to the U.S. Embassy that might get overrun down there. So we're prepping and we're getting all our gear ready. So it's an amphib, and the back deck comes down, and then they flood the deck. So boats and stuff can come in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting ready to approach the ship, and one of the guys was looking up at all the people watching and wasn't paying attention and kind of veered off. And we yelled his name, like, "Hey!" And he realized what he was doing, jerked back to get it straight. And we were just getting ready to hit, we were just getting ready to board. I go over the side, and then I go from the surface, get caught in the prop wash, and all of a sudden I'm at the surface, and then I'm 30 feet down.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That quick, huh?
I mean, it was fast. It was, and disoriented again, but I was so mad that I tried to swim up, I couldn't move because that hand, whatever was holding me down, I wasn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I literally sat back, crossed my arms and legs, furious, and looking up. And I looked down at my vest. I was like, I can't pop my vest and pop to the surface because I don't know where I am. I don't know if I'm going to get caught in the actual propeller.
Mm-hmm.
So I sit down there still fuming, and I try to climb up a little bit more, and nothing happened. I looked down at my vest again. I was like, if I can't go up this next time, then I'm going to pop it.
Mm-hmm.
So I start to come up, and I start to make some headway, and finally get to the surface, and the ship's a quarter mile away.
Wow.
I'd been under there for over 2 minutes. My platoon thought I was dead. And, this head pops up enraged, right? They from as far as they can see, they're like, oh, man, he's mad. Oh, he's mad. So they come up and rescue me and pull me on board. They're like, hey, man, you might want to rethink this water thing. But again, I was prepared. I didn't panic. It's the longest I think I've ever been in that situation. And was like, well, I'm going to figure this thing out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't panic again. But that was, if I had a third one, I would have been.
Uh-oh.
Profession.
Oh, there we go. I think we lost it for a second. You there? Yep.
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. Things happen. Murphy's Law.
Yeah. But yeah, I was prepared for what was next, and I had another iteration of. Yeah.
Yep. I think it's cutting in and out. So this is a perfect time. If it's internet, Wi-Fi, whatever it is, we're going to cut quick to a Sergeant Be Safe cartoon so that whatever that Murphy's Law wave can go by, and we'll be right back into it. So stand by, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. We're going to jump right back into it momentarily.
Look at all the pretty butterflies in the sky. I guess I'll just cross the street here.
Oh, good. Light's green. I'm glad I can go. Oh my gosh, watch out!
Sergeant, be safe. Be small, baby!
Megan, watch out for that car!
I got you.
Oh, jeez. I didn't even see that car coming.
Oh, my gosh. Are you two okay?
Yes, we're okay. Megan, you have to do a better job paying attention.
I just wanted to cross the street.
I didn't see you walking there.
Megan, you just can't cross in the middle of the street. You have to go to the intersections and use the proper crosswalks. Wait for traffic to clear, and then go. If you don't follow these simple directions, you could get a ticket for jaywalking, or worse, be hit by a car and seriously injured.
I'll be more careful from now on. Ooh, look at the other butterfly.
Oh my goodness.
Sergeant Be Safe, you are the best.
This is very true, thank you very much. I did have to turn on supersonic beast mode to jump and get Megan out of the way. Remember folks, look both ways before crossing the street. And wait till the intersection's clear and cross at the crosswalks. And that's your tip of the day to get you on your way.
And we are back. Shout out to those voiceovers with Sergeant B. Safe. Some of you may know who they are. Others of you may not. They are very recognizable voices for those of you that are in this local area. So give them their props. I don't like not all of them want me to put their names out there on the platform. However, some of their names are there. Some of them have been guests on the show. Some of them, most of them, 95% of them are in some sort of first responder law enforcement capacity. So make sure you give them the shout outs and the just dues that they deserve. We're back in this interview. We got Mark Green right here. Mark Green, I know he's sideways, but we're going to make this thing happen anyway. It's all right.
Unbelievable.
There it is.
Back?
Yep, they're good to go. Yep.
All right.
Perfect. We talked about the near falls. We talked about family and bonding with them. One thing that another area of your book that resonated with me was being part of an elite team, having that tribe feeling for years, and then having to transition out of that. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of guys we talk about on this platform is transitioning out of law enforcement or the first responder community, period, and becoming a quote unquote person again. And I know we all brag and look and talk about retirement. We can't wait for, we're about 12 years in or so. We're like, I can't wait. I can't do this anymore. And then once we're really about 2 or 3 years out and we come back in, we're like, wow, I got more days behind me than I do ahead of me. I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't see that light at the end of the tunnel. Can you explain to us how that transition was for you and how you got the best of the transition before the transition got the best of you? Can you hear me?
Clee, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me?
No, I can't hear you.
Okay, let me see what we can do here. Can you hear me?
No, not yet.
All right. It's all right. Stand by, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. A little technical difficulties. So while we're getting that situated and settled, you guys see the website, his website, scrolling below, themarkgreen.com. That gives you access to his website if you wanted to reach out to him, if you wanted to have a conversation with him. Also, I got mine on Amazon. It was a good read. It was a quick read as well. Tons of good information, unsealed. And he talks about, brings it from before he became a SEAL, during a SEAL, and life after the SEALs, and getting us caught up on all that. So make sure you guys check that out. Mark, can you hear us yet? Okay, I don't think he can. Make sure you guys check out his website. Check out this book as well. He gives tips on how he overcame his transition as well. There were certain things that happened to him during the transition. Once you're transitioning out, the same team or platoon, they don't treat you bad, but they can tell that they're kind of moving on from you because the mission's still paramount. The mission's still priority. So they know that you're soon on your way out. Mark accomplished a lot, being a SEAL. Then he started out as enlisted. Then he went to officer school, which he was a candidate for, which wasn't easy to do while being a SEAL. And he explains all that in the book as well. So check that out. He talks about how he transitioned, and how he met interesting people and was set up with the USC. And in the process of that, the family dynamics weren't in good working order, for lack of a better term, and things had to go a totally different way and separate. Where he went out to USC, where he was loving it, he got those same individuals, was able to get him, his wife, and kids set up. But they wanted to stay here on the East Coast, so therefore they had to find a way to make that happen. He talks about how he would visit his kids while he would commute back and forth from USC to the East Coast, and how he had situations just dealing with normal, basic civilian life in a Home Depot, having to have conversations, having to get things sorted through. And it's amazing what you think. What's easy to the regular person is very difficult for someone who's working at level between level 7 and level 10 capacity for the majority of their career. So when something level 2 happens, you know, the things start come flooding in because we don't work at that capacity often. Let me see if you can hear me now. Mark, can you hear me?
I got you.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Yeah, I was going ahead. I explained the transition from U.S. I'm sorry, the transition, how you became an officer, and then also how you transitioned from the East Coast to USC and transitioning from a SEAL life, living life at a very high elite level for the majority of your career to coming down and working as a civilian, and how things were different, were affecting you. The tribe mentality didn't seem to be there often, and we as first responders and law enforcement, we understand the tribe mentality, and I was hoping that you could explain how you transitioned out of an elite program into what would be considered a civilian program, how you got the best of the transition, and the transition didn't get the best of you.
Well, it was a process, because the hardest thing for me when I transitioned out was, one day I was Mark Green, Navy SEAL, been doing this for 20 years at the highest level, one of the highest levels. And then all of a sudden Saturday, I was Mark Green, you know, only thing I was shooting was emails at that point, you know, and all of a sudden I felt like I was tolerated, but not welcome, if that makes sense. And it's not in a bad way. The guys are still doing the job. And when you show up and you're like, hey guys, I'm back. They're like, hey, we got about 10 minutes before we got to get back on the road, or we got to get back in. We just have that same job, because the military and first responders and LEOs it's designed to continue and thrive without you being there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, once you get to the realization of that, you're like, man, I'm never going to recreate this locker room again.
Yeah.
That was really, really challenging. And then you're unemployed for the first time in 20 years, you know, and you don't speak the language anymore. And you're, for the military, your muscles to do things individually have atrophied, right? You've done everything as a team for 2 decades. Mm-hmm. So for you to say, oh, you know what, I've had this team dynamics, I'm going to go ahead and do this on my own, you just don't know how to do it anymore. Or, I'm sorry, you don't know how to do it as well.
Right.
Out of practice. So then it was like, and then life gets quiet. And that's when things start to manifest. And for me, it was my invisible injuries that started to manifest. My memory, I couldn't hold on to new stuff. All the old stuff in my career, I could have hopped back out there and done it again. But the new stuff, I just couldn't figure it out. And what happened when I took the job at USC, it was like, okay, this is great, because I get to keep my family, you know, fed.
Yep.
And the deal that they offered me was unbelievable, right? So I go out and interview, and the gentleman said, hey, you know, after your 3 other interviews, come back and I'll talk to you. So he comes back and talks to me and said, hey, you know, what's it going to take to get you out of USC? And then talk about not speaking the language. I didn't know it was a job offer. So I was like, what are you talking about? And then it hit me. I was like, oh, well, I don't want to come out to LA. I live in Virginia. The kids are back in Virginia. I don't want to come out here. So I threw out a number that I thought was just $1 million. I was like, oh, well, you know, this is what I want. He's like, okay, no problem. I was like, oh, I didn't even research that. He said that number like it was nothing. I was like, okay. I was like, well, I have a wife at the time. She's in the medical field, and, you know, there are no jobs out here for her. Got on the phone and said, hey, I got a guy I want to hire. Do you have a job at USC Medical Center? I was like, dang. All right, didn't research that. So, and then strike three was, I was like, oh, you know, I have 3 kids, and, you know, the schools aren't the best out here. Gets on the phone again, said, hey, I got a guy I want to hire. Do you have those 3 scholarships available? And I'm like, oh yeah, anything for you. So he came on the phone, and I felt like I was in an interview with with Al Capone. It's like, you know, you're not refusing this. So I, all of a sudden, I was like, okay, well, I guess this is what I'm doing.
He made you an offer you couldn't refuse. Couldn't refuse it.
So unfortunately, I was going through the transition of leaving the service.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter had graduated high school, was going off to college. My son leaving eighth grade, going to high school. And all those transition points were happening all at once.
Right.
And things just started to fall apart. And my wife at the time chose not to join me. So I moved out to a new city, learning a new profession in one of the biggest cities in the world. And all of a sudden, I wasn't any good at anything. Right. I wouldn't be a good husband. I wouldn't be a good father. I didn't think I was learning a new industry. I wasn't doing any good at that. I didn't know LA. And that was just the hardest part. But the cool thing was USC is as close to a cult as you're going to get. Right. We love campus. And when I got there, it was just, I found my people. I found my tribe. That was the anchor point that I needed to weather that storm. Like, no matter what happened, I still had this new family, had this new mission. And then I said, you know what, I want to be a part of this thing forever. So how do I do that? So in the midst of, you know, all this failure, I was like, what can I do to make things better? Oh, I know, I can pile something else on. So I started going to graduate school for the second time. So, and then it just started to cascade, and I was in over my head, and I couldn't manage it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I was, had all this emotional stuff that I didn't quite understand, because they literally beat the emotion out of you. It was all business, right?
Right, right.
I took this, I had this injury. I fell off my bicycle and skinned up my whole right side of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my daughter's birthday. I flew back to Virginia and was on a roller coaster because I didn't want to miss with my kids, and they could tell something was wrong. And we picked a roller coaster that wouldn't bang up dad's leg.
Right.
So we picked the wrong one. It banged my entire leg up. Right. And I was in so much pain that unconsciously I was like, okay, you got two options. You can deal with the emotional stuff you've got going on, or you can deal with the physical stuff you've got going on, but you can't do both.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose physical and put all my effort into this physical pain. And then once all that focus went there, the emotional stuff just overwhelmed. I was sitting in the fetal position in some corner at Busch Gardens.
Wow.
Crying my eyes out.
Wow.
Because all that, you were grieving the loss of, you know, your prestige and your old life, and you're going through a divorce, and everything is just not as ordered as your life had been for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And cognitively, I wasn't right, and I just wasn't, and it was just too much. But that was the spark that I needed to actually say, okay, you can't do this on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And you're at a research university, and I just started researching and said, hey, I need help with this thing. And once I put that olive branch out there, like, oh, well, we have this one experimental program that is just for traumatic brain injury. And then we have just something for PTS, and we have counselors for going through a divorce. So all the resources that I had, I was so stubborn and so like, I'm going to finish this on my own, that it was like, yeah, you can't.
Yeah.
So then rally all these people who genuinely care about you and stop being so stubborn and accept the help. And then from that point on, I started to thrive again. And I didn't feel like I was a burden, and I just had this network around me, and I could then focus on being a better parent. And fortunately, the marriage didn't survive it, but that's okay, because I did a lot of soul searching, and it's like, okay, I can be the best father to my kids, and I can be the best employee, and I can be the best Mark I can be without being her husband. And I was like, okay, I'm that's what life is now. So I'm okay with that.
Right.
So that was the beginning of that journey. And it took me another probably year and a half to fully get back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to come up with ways to, hey, if you're cognitively not there, what does that mean? How do you combat that? So instead of going into a fight with Mike Tyson unprepared and just getting beat up, you know, I had trained to the point where I wasn't going to beat it, but I knew what I was up against. I knew how to fight it, or I knew how to not get a complete beat down by it. So that's where I am today. And, you know, there's still some struggles, but they're in the periphery now. It's not front and center.
Right. Right. Well, thank you for sharing that, and congratulations to you as well for being in a better place as well. I know the caveat of being first responder and law enforcement is with us having such hectic work lives or careers or schedules, it does make it very difficult as well on the family to attend PTO meetings, to attend games, school functions, holidays. What name you? You know, we do our best. Most of us out here do our best to make as much as we can. Even the ones that we do make, you know, sometimes work is still on the mind. So we're physically there, but mentally not. Or not. Some of us, you still get called out for whatever kind of employment that we have. You get called out to a job for a scene. If you're a firefighter, you know, in moment's notice, your pager goes off. You got to go running out the door. Let alone if that's Thanksgiving Day and you're sitting at the table with the family, you got to go running out the door. Yes, you're loving the job. The people who are in danger appreciate you, but the family that you leave behind, you know, certain things, it does leave a mark. So it takes a special and strong person to be first responders in this world and to share those stories, to actually see how some things are very successful and other things may not be as successful at the time, but everything happens for a reason. Is a wonderful way to actually showcase that. And thank you for being vulnerable enough, Mark, to share your side of the story.
Yeah, it's important that people struggle. And, you know, I'm not saying do it the way I did it, but realistically, to get the message out and let people know that, hey, this may resonate because I'm struggling, or the service member may not know, but their spouse or significant other knows, and your kids know. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, pick up the book and read a story and say, oh, dad's going through this, or mom's going through this. Yeah. Hey, mom, pops, read this story, not even the whole book. And then maybe that's the catalyst that they need to say, you know what? Okay, we're good. And I also wanted to stop reading about the 22 veterans a day that are mm-hmm. taking their own lives, you know?
Yeah.
And that, you know, I've lost more friends to taking their own lives than to combat.
Yeah. And
I was like, you know, this is your opportunity to give back and say, hey, I hope, let this be a first start to get taking that first step.
Yeah.
And that's what I really wanted to achieve with the book.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it goes without saying, first responders, we know here in the law enforcement community, those of us that have been in it long enough, we know the number one killer of law enforcement officers is self-deletion. And it's a shame that we have to say that. It's a shame that it happens. And seeing it in the military as well, I'm sorry that it is that way. And we're doing better with mental health. But again, you're taking a stand against it. You've talked about your stories, talked about your setbacks and things like that. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel is basically what I'm trying to get to. If anyone hasn't picked up a copy of your book, how could they do so?
So they can go to themarkgreen.com and place an order. Mm-hmm. They can go to anywhere books are sold, and they can also go to Amazon. And if you go to Amazon, one ask I has, just leave a review, you know, and push it, give it a review. Pushes it up through the algorithm, and hopefully it pushes it out farther and wider so somebody else who needs it could get it.
Absolutely. Done. You sold me. I'll leave a review. I got mine from Amazon, so I'll show up as a verified purchaser. I just left a review for a former guest on the show. I had to leave three because, and it still isn't up there. I know Amazon, it has they're just funny like that. And I know some of them take a week to process or whatever. But Amazon, if you're listening, just let mine go through. Just stop making it difficult. Just to prove it. There's nothing bad there. It's good pictures. It's good information. And it needs to be shared. So I'm going to do the same with you. Hopefully that there are no problems. And hopefully someone from Amazon is listening and we'll get that through.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. And Mark, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. I thank everything that you do have done. Putting yourself out there, being vulnerable. We had a wonderful conversation, and through the course of conversation, I may have forgot to ask a question, or I may have jogged your memory on something that you may want to elaborate on. Is there anything else that you want to share with us? Right now, the floor is yours.
So when I was doing this process, it was, I came up with six pillars of my transition. And you know, it's not for everybody. I'm an introvert by nature. So these are the things that really helped me. And the six pillars are isolation, indulgence, cocooning, emergence, grief, and resolution. And in the isolation phase, like I said, I'm an introvert, so I process best on my own. And I recharge and reset everything. And then second phase I went into was indulgence. And I named it indulgence because sometimes it's not healthy. But I gorged myself on information on what I wanted to do, where I wanted to live, what's the language of the organization that I want to go into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything I could find, I engorged myself on. And then once that happened, I needed to go back into isolation or cocoon, because with what I was going through, I knew that in that cocooning process, I needed to make changes physically, mentally, get back into a good spot. So then once I went into that cocooning phase and started changing and making changes for the better, I emerged as a better version of myself and capable of, you know, doing things at the level that I used to do it. And fifth is I finally had to come to grips with, I was grieving the loss of that former life, in the life of being a SEAL and going on missions and the camaraderie and the structure and just the amazing training that you're going through, and you know, grieving the loss of my dad when he passed or my best friend that passed. You know, you're taught not to grieve, and finally you just have to say, you know what, I'm really sad or grieving the loss of all this, and it happened suddenly. Mm-hmm. And then finally you resolve the fact that, hey, you know what, that part of my life's over. Like I said, I'm never going to recreate that SEAL locker room again. And I'm okay with that. I have to find my new mission. I have to find my new normal. I have to find new ways to improve and thrive. And then once I got to that point, you know, I'm on the Klee show right now. So now I'm an author. So, you know, and I didn't go through those things in sequence. It was, I isolate and then I would start the cocooning process, but then it would get interrupted, or I would indulge myself to the point where, okay, well, I don't want to do that job and life happens. So, you know, in a vacuum or in the best conditions, I could go through these six processes, but that's what I came up with. And it resonated with me, and I shared it with my kids, and I shared it with people who did a beta reading on it, and they're like, this makes so much sense. So so hopefully this helps. And like I said, this book is really, as you know, it's not about me saying, hey, do what I do because I was the best at it, and you do what I do and you're gonna be successful just like me. It's like, no, here's my career, good, bad, and ugly. Here's post-career, good, bad, and ugly. And here's some tools that I used to help me get back to normal.
Gotcha. I like that. I like how the cocooning process. I mean, you go through that cocooning process and you go through the metamorphosis and then out the butterfly of the new world. So You go in one way, you come back out in a totally different way and have to force to adjust for this new way of life. I like that. I like that. Got Elliot Moya, Chief Moya in here, a former guest on the show. He's looking forward to reading this book. Thank you for tuning in, Chief. Make sure you tag, like, and share. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, Mark, I had a great time having you on the show. Thank you for making yourself available and blessing the show. It was a great time laughing with you, hearing some of the highs and lows, understanding formulating how you went from a young child to a blockbuster to, or I'm sorry, from college to blockbuster to in the Navy, having all these adventures. A lot of people dream of living a life like this. You got to fulfill a lot of fantasies of a lot of people just by living the life, explaining, putting yourself out there, being vulnerable and explaining these stories, and then coming, letting people see who you are now, letting people see what you've been up to, letting people see how you transitioned out of the Navy into being a college employee as an administrator. Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know the exact title, and doing the things at that capacity as well.
Yeah, so I'm humble and grateful, and you know, I'm always a second or a joke away from a smile. So you know, that's the way I've always been, and you know, I've had so much support over the last month and a half since we launched, and hopefully some of the people know that when they DM me and I respond, that's me responding because I'm so grateful. You know. The book was a first step, but all the support that's come out of it since then, you know, as long as I can maintain it, I'm going to stay up till 2 a.m. and answer everyone I can. So, I really appreciate everyone who's watching and who might buy the book and might pass it on to somebody who might need it.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, make sure you guys get your copy. I got mine, and eventually, hopefully, I'll get to see Mark at some sort of capacity where I can get mine signed. But make sure you guys get yours as well, and we'll make that thing happen and get this book out there and get this story told as well. All right? Sounds good. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Black and Blue, where we go live weekly. And when we go live with a special guest at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that guest is either law enforcement or a first responder, whether they're rookie, seasoned, or retiree. And we talk about their trainings, their experiences, and their publications. And we did not fall short today. And I'm glad you guys stayed tuned in, stood by, had a little bit of technical difficulty, but we got over that hump. Challenges are there to make us better, and we got better today because we finished this dynamic show and got a lot of information out there and got to share a lot of information. So make sure you guys hit that like button, smash that like button, because it hits the algorithm. We get that information out there. Make sure you guys tag, like, and share so other people can get this information as well. And we're going to keep moving this plane. We're building the plane as we fly, and we're going to keep soaring until higher heights. I got a special guest coming to the show next week. And you know me, I want to tell you who they are, but I'm not going to, because I got to leave you at the edge of your seat, give you a cliffhanger so you guys can tune in. We're going to tune in and go live next week at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So make sure if you're having some subscribe to the YouTube page, do that. If you're not connected with me on LinkedIn, do that. If we're not friends or acquainted on Facebook or any other platform, make sure you guys take care of that so we can stay connected. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'm Coach Klee. I'm your motivational speaker, your empowerment coach, your author, and your favorite baker saying 10-4 over and out. Have a good night. We love you. Great information, like Shayla said. Absolutely. Let me get this going. Yep. Thank you guys.
Your Honor, we have undeniable evidence that Chance Wilder attempted to hack into multiple bank accounts and steal money. We request the maximum penalty.
That's right, Your Honor. Chance Wilder is a menace to society, and we must put an end to his hacking shenanigans.
Objection, Your Honor. My client is innocent until proven guilty. We believe there's been a misunderstanding. Chance Wilder is a misunderstood genius, not a criminal.
Order in the court. Let's hear the defense's case.
Your Honor, I present to you Chance Wilder's latest creation, the Hacker Helper 3000. This incredible software was designed to protect innocent people from cyber threats. Change the attentions. We're pure.
Objection, Your Honor. This is just a ploy to distract us from the real issues at hand.
Indeed, Your Honor. We even have evidence of Chance Wilder's hacking attempts. He's gone so far to have left a digital signature saying, "Catch me if you can."
Chance Wilder, I've heard both sides of the story. Hacking is illegal. Since you like to take wild chances, I sentence you to community service, where you use your skills for good, helping organizations protect themselves from cyber threats.
Oh man, no money and community service?
Shut up and take the deal.
Well, there's another good job done by our district attorney, just in case.
It was a team effort.
And there you go, folks. Justice was brought to Chance Wilder, but I'm pretty sure he'll be up to his shenanigans again. So tune in, and that's your tip of the day to get you on your way.
Said you were. It would be real simple if the problem was bad cops. It ain't.